Good morning. It's a bit difficult to speak about theatre in the morning because it's such a night business. But I'm very happy to be invited here and to talk both as a teacher and as a mature creator, as Sally phrased it. I would have liked to show you some bits and pieces of my work, but unfortunately, technically, it didn't work out this morning. I tried hard for 1 hour. And I will try to speak now in 10 steps, not 10 commandments, 10 steps. The first five for the system of education. I'm actually the head of a theater academy around Frankfurt with all departments like dance and actors, directing, music. And I'm also the managing director and a professor at the Institute of Applied Theater Studies in Gießen, at the University of Gießen. And the first five statements will be for the system of education. Then another five for my own work as an artist, as a composer, and as a director. And don't even think this relationship 5-5 is representative for a balanced way of sharing my time between those professions. I put much more energy and into teaching. And until now, I don't regret it. When we talk about education in performance arts, we talk about the very end of a long chain. It's completely wrong to expect from the existing education institutions any impulse or innovation towards a creative future. And they didn't arise much anyway. All our existing schools and theater-related skills and craft are the result of a long-term convention. All educational institutions have been founded and built with the only intention to deliver new blood for the representative institutions, which presents ballets, operas, theaters, as a result of an existing artistic practice which is at least 100 years old. And for opera education, probably it's even longer. It's probably 150 years old basic assumptions. Because opera is the form among the performing arts which is probably developing the slowest. And the schools were not built to renew the aesthetics or even question those institutions and their structures. The education for the market of the existing institutions is the very last and the slowest in the order: art, institution for the art, education for the institution for the arts. It's fine and fair that the alumni for a while will get quite reliable jobs afterwards, but it's irresponsible not to prepare them for a future further insecure and far more complex future. And with every generation of graduating young artists, we legitimize the aesthetics represented by the institutions, and we can be pretty sure that every generation is less flexible than the one before. At least that's my experience when I work with young actors or with young instrumentalists in orchestras. It's always the old ones and bored ones who are open, or are widely open and curious for new techniques, new ways of collaborating, and new ways of performing in different areas and crossing borders of their own disciplines. Instead, I think we should educate clever young artists who are able to develop their own aesthetics. We shouldn't, I'm talking about art, not to pretend to know how to do it. We don't know it. The future of performing arts is hopefully not foreseeable, and in order to prepare the students for the coming complexity, we have to involve them in our research and to enable them to do their own. 2, any craft and skill is ideological. Speech training is about to extinguish your personality, your biography, your accent, the singularity of your unique voice to fulfill a common standard. The same is with singing lessons. That's why I, by the way, rarely work with classical trained actors and singers. I rather work with artists who still have their own specific and peculiar and personally unique expression in their voice. It's the same with role studies in actor studies, studios, with directorial strategies in drama departments, which are unable to deal with non-psychological post-dramatic texts without figure speech. You rarely find, I speak about German institutions, I rarely find a formal external training beyond what we call the Einfühlung. Trainings which rather unreflected and unconsciously make you believe in the naturalness of the classical convention. That's what you get in those institutions. And when I recently opened the stage door of our institute in Gießen, and there was a trainer who was talking to my students, and he said, I just heard that when he had said to them, never say to an actor higher or lower, never say to an actor louder or softer. And I secretly closed the door because that is exactly how I work. And I never engaged this trainer anyway. And think of the ignorance towards the achievements of theatre avant-garde at the beginning of the 20th century. How long did it take and how many pieces of Robert Wilson did we have to see until we took serious what Adolf Appia has already developed back then, that light is an independent art form on stage and not only a tool to make the actors or the stage design visible. We urgently need the luxury of research instead of teaching the classical training methods without being aware of their historical implications. We need a wide openness of the students not to feed the cliché of their future profession as it has been mediated by school, theatre, by musicals, or by TV to seven-year-old boys and girls. And I definitely think that the decision to become an actor or an actress or a director in this age is much too early. We might, with our institutions, even attract the wrong clientele. 3, time is crucial. To give time in an everyday basis is important, meaning to spend not every possible minute in skills and craft trainings, but to enable the emerging young artists to reflect the ever-changing contemporary concept of art in general, which means to read, to reflect theoretically what you're doing, to listen to contemporary music, to go to museums, to see and experience neighbor art forms, such as performance art, in order to develop an artistic intelligence and an involvement in the discourse about a contemporary concept of artistic experience. I think very much artistic experience is in a very changing process right now. It cannot be seen anymore only as a direct encounter with the protagonist on stage, as an identification, as mirroring yourself as an audience in a big figure on stage with the classical categories of intensity and presence. But it can also be seen, that's what we can learn from visual arts, as an indirect encounter, as a mediated experience, mediated by a third one. Instead of a specialization, which comes too early, as I mentioned, I think one consequence could be to offer time for the young students to build a more reflected and wider sense of performing arts before one decides to become an actor or stage designer. Maybe even the strict division of disciplines doesn't work anymore. And when I look at a lot of the performance teams which emerge from our institute in Gießen, like Rimini Protocol, Gob Squad, Shishi Pop, Monster Truck, Hoffmann Lindhelm, Auftrag Lora, and many, many others, they show that the classical disciplines have no importance for them at all. Especially regarding upcoming directors, the other consequence is to provide them with social competence more than with a big ego, with the ability of collaboration and mature self-responsibility instead of division of labor, like we have copied it from the institutions and learned it from the heavy gravity institutions. And this is not, I'm speaking about this later, this is not a moral or only moral or social, it's a purely aesthetical need, I think. All our students, by the way, in the little institute I'm directing, all our students, even those who see themselves more as future dramaturgs or festival curators, they have to learn how to use safely a ladder, how to hang and program the lights, how to edit sound and video, etc. 4, in an axiom of the German sociological system theory by Niklas Luhmann, art is defined by the implausibility of its origination. And when we apply that to conventional theater, we might not consider it as art anymore. Since art means the unforeseeability of what to expect, it means working without compromises. Otherwise, it's not Kunst, it's, as we call it in Germany, Kunstgewerbe. I don't know what you say, decorative arts maybe. We should avoid to discriminate the possibilities of the stage, and I'm unhappy that I cannot show you some examples. We should avoid to discriminate the possibilities of the stage by telling well-known stories, sending messages to an underestimated audience, and making statements on reality. We should gain back the artistic territory of performing arts. We can consider theater as an experience instead, and not as a message. And we can also consider that a number of 150, 500,000 people in the audience is much more clever than the team who's creating a piece. When we accept that artistic experience is the experience of the unknown, of something we haven't seen, we haven't heard, we have no words for, which opens our view, which includes all our senses, which develops especially our imagination, then also performing arts, and not only visual arts, has to question all conventions, which are so subtle, disguised in basic assumptions and conventions which we teach in our schools. In all my works, I discovered, for example, that the absence has an enormous power of attraction, the absence of what I call the conventional idea of presence. I mean, not to show everything, not to show the obvious, not to occupy the center of the stage. Let the audience discover what's being happening on stage. An important part of our education is therefore to teach and to research performing arts within the context of the other art forms, visual art, contemporary music, non-dramatic literature. For example, the fact that the publishing houses for theater texts so many years after Gertrude Stein, Samuel Beckett, Heiner Müller, and Sarah Kane, they sought their texts in cast size or specific cast search categories. That's the actual drama. 5. We should never underestimate the gravity of an institution, and I know what I'm talking about because we have about 250 Stadttheater. We have like 85 opera houses in Germany, more than the rest of the world. And those houses are very good for the repertoire, and they're very valuable for the repertoire, but they're impossible for any change, and they have a hard time to deal with the unknown. They ignore any international art forms, any other than Eurocentric art aesthetics. They're based on national language only, and, which is the opposite of an artistic issue, they're based on familiarity. Familiarity with an ensemble, with a director you know, with a repertoire you know, with a staff, with lifelong contracts, with abonnements forever, etc. And these decisions are all a priori. They are rarely questioned. They are rarely consciously decided for. These institutions are unable to ask, what does the artist need? They only answer ritually the question, what needs the institution? What can you do for the institution as an artist? Compatibility with the institution seems to be reason number one in making so-called artistic decisions. For example, when I made an opera in 2002, Landscape with Distant Relatives, I got about 10 commissions, offers of opera commissions from opera houses. I didn't accept any of those because I know I can't be good in those institutions and they can't be good with me. And most of those commissions which I was offered were actually sort of bio-operas, which means operas on the biography of a very famous person. Like there was a Joseph Beuys opera, there was an Einstein opera to celebrate 100 years of his theory of relativity, though I told them there was already an Einstein opera, but they didn't know that. And there was an offer for Hans Christian Andersen opera for his 200th birthday. And I remember very well, I think it was in this room or one of these rooms here in the Harvard, nearly 10 years ago, Jonathan Rieke reported from an opera competition. They had Genesis Prize of the Opera or something like this. And he said, I don't remember how much, but he mentioned how big percentage of all applications were bio operas, because they are compatible for the institution. You have a big role, which you can get a famous singer for, and then he can say, I was the Einstein in this. And you have an identification, you have a centralized focus for the audience, all this. And you are a little bit more free in the narrative structure, but there is a narrative. So nothing really questions the structure of an opera. They changed the sounds in the contemporary operas in the last 20, 30, 40 years, but it never changed the structure. And another example, speaking as a composer, is that all the commissions you get as a composer for contemporary orchestras, for example, they are to legitimize the existence of such an orchestra. Otherwise, I don't think that all these young composers, 25, 30 years old young composers, they would necessarily in the 21st century compose for flute and clarinet. But that's where they get the commissions for. And so don't think that this is an artistic idea. It's to legitimize the existing structure of a body of instruments which is 200 years old. Six, what we urgently need from what I said now is that our laboratoriums. Laboratoriums for theater and music theater, even for music itself, where everything can be questioned on what we work, with whom we work, for example, with which instruments we work, how long we work, the way we work. And that's the same with cars. A new car, you cannot be invented and experimentally created at a production line, at a conveyor belt. And in Germany, our theaters, they are production lines. Every night they have a different piece, and you get away from the stage at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to put on the new piece in the repertoire system. And we need a space, and that's something also I could say for all my works which I've done, we need a space where we can work with all elements from the very beginning. Every theater director amongst you knows that whatever element comes late into a process is decorative or illustrative. When you are able to work with the light from the very first day, when you are able to work with the sound design from the very first day with all other elements, then you are able to invent all the individual elements of theater at the same level. As soon as you start to do it after each other, you go back to what you vision already how it will be, but you can't get surprised anymore. Even in this wonderful, small and flexible Theater VD in Lausanne, Switzerland, where I luckily can work since about 12 years, a house without any ensemble and with only a very small team, for every production, I have to change a bit the structure, or how they are used to work, according to the needs of that artwork. And so for this, I need a very generous and confident director who is learning with me. And I remember when our very first production, Max Black, in 98, he had to learn that my sound engineer is unreplaceable and as important as the actor. He didn't know that. Because usually for theater, it's not necessarily true. But that's what he had to learn. And he also had to learn that I don't want my pieces to be performed 100 times in 3 months. That's the way they usually work there in this theater. But maybe 100 times in 10 years, which worked. In my second production in VD, Hashirigaki, the theater had to be confident that it is possible to organize 3 peculiar female performers from Sweden, Canada, and Japan for every single show. But it was possible. We did it also more than 100 times right now. In my third production, Era Rityaka, they had already learned that it is possible to sell a piece with a title nobody can pronounce and also sell it more than 120 times all over the world, and that it is even better to find a curious and intelligent audience than by announcing a piece as Hamlet or Lear. In my fourth production, Stieb das Dinge, the technicians of the theater turned for 1 year into specialists for robotics, and they showed that it's hard to draw a line between technical and artistic decisions, that it was possible to build a theater machine which attracts the audience even without any living person on stage, or maybe track them even better. But instead having 5 mechanical pianos, water, fork, rain, stone, and ice instead. Maybe you have seen it, we had a run in London 2 years ago for 2 weeks with this piece. Now it's actually in Taiwan. and then goes to the Melbourne Festival. So maybe you can catch it up there. In my sixth production, which actually premiered here, the Edinburgh Festival, I went to the house but did not enter. We learned that the four British gentlemen of the Hilliard Ensemble, who basically had stood in churches for the last 30 years, were able to perform with British humor like experienced actors, and they even sing better.